Easter edition of Forever Bristol City podcast, being recorded the morning after the tea time before, where it finished at Ashton Gate in front of the Sky camera. It finished City 2, Borough 2. 4 points from the two games over Easter was probably in excess of most people's expectations, and it was a good game as well. And I say that despite us throwing away a two-goal lead. Joining me to discuss the game and more, as usual, are Ian and Mark. Morning, chaps. Are we feeling chipper this morning?
Yeah, good as gold.
Yeah.
10 out of 10, as usual.
Fantastic. That's good.
I mean, although we gave up a two-goal lead, I felt like there are plenty of positives to come from the game, and I thought we'd be hard-pressed to get a point over those two games. It was amazing.
Yeah, no, it was good. I mean, look, as we normally do, and I'll start with you, Mark, since you've got the ball, so to speak. A brief summary of the game in 30 seconds from you.
Yeah, a fantastic advert for Championship football. End-to-end, plenty of goal-mouth action, where City had 16 shots on target. They turned the ball over well in the first half and got the and got passing between the three behind Wells, and got a goal on half time. Although we should have been at least 2-0 up by then, as we'd had plenty of chances in the first 10 minutes. Scored another great goal just after half time, but we've tried to defend, but too deep. We had plenty of players behind the ball for Borough's two goals, both poorly defended. But where we would have buckled previously, we competed well and almost won it at the death. Although Borough could have as well. So a fair result against a good team with four lone players who had quality, you know, were high quality.
Yeah, no, I think maybe they were the difference between the sides. Although one might have said that had they won, and you use the term, we didn't buckle. I mean, Ian, what were your thoughts on the game? I mean, they came into this on the back of two defeats, Borough, so they needed something. But a quick summary of the game from your perspective.
From my point of view, let's start with the positive. You had Bell's first home league goal, Hornick's first goal and assist for the club. We got a point. 4 points over the Easter is a bonus, because I didn't think we'd ever get any more than two. If we were lucky, we were the better team in the first half when Borough didn't even have a shot on target. Good to see Naismith, Conway and Omar Taylor-Clark all fit. Allegedly, Callas and Scott may be fit to at least be on the bench at Watford. We're effectively 13 points clear of relegation, with only 15 points to play for.
Yeah.
And we had 7 shots on target, which is about twice as many as we normally do.
Yeah. Okay. Well, look, I'll stick with you, Ian. The starting lineup, it does pick itself to some extent at the moment. I think King started the game, didn't he? Yes. And he hadn't done previously. But I commented to you before the game, maybe we shouldn't read anything into it, but Kane Wilson didn't even make the bench this week. So was that a surprise to you when you saw that lineup name?
I was surprised he wasn't on the bench when you've had three players on the bench who've never kicked a ball for Bristol City's first team. So you had Leeson, Wood and Walls Richards. Now, okay, Walls Richards, totally understand that one. But with Wilson, anything like fit, he should be able to force a place on that bench. Now, come back all I said, if he had the flu or anything like that, or he's got a strain. It may be that there's a under-21s game this week and Pearson wants him to do 90 minutes in that. So we'll have to see what comes out in the wash on that one. But his first season at the club's gone really badly for the boy, and I feel sorry for him.
Yeah, no, it has. Mark, the City lineup picks itself, but, I mean, their team, they got some decent players in there, haven't they? And you talked about the lone players that they had. I think three of them started for them. And, you know, they've played that loan market quite effectively, as evidenced by their position up there. Because are they still benefiting from parachute payments, Borough, or not?
I think it's spread over 4 years. I think are they in their third year of parachute payments? I think. Because they only were up for a year, weren't they?
Well, if you're only up for a year, you only get 2 years' money.
Oh, right. So maybe not in that case. But I mean, they brought in a quality player in Aaron Ramsey, who's Jacob Ramsey's younger brother from Aston Villa. Ryan Giles, the left wing back. They brought him in from Wolves. Zach Steffen, of course, on loan from Manchester City. And Cameron Archer, another Villa player who had previously been on loan at Preston last year, I think from January 2022. And I think he played against City in that 2-2 draw up there. He came on later. So they had quality players. Akpom did get a lot, you know, many chances, although he featured well in the end, powerful runner, as well as, you know, a player who scored over 20 goals this season. But the difference really for me was Aaron Ramsey, you know, quality player, always had time on the ball, always, you know, available for a pass. You've obviously paid out good money, but they get, you know, you get quality players. That was the difference, really. Yeah. And they were better in their execution with the fewer chances they had on goal, I think you could probably say, especially when we defended deeply. And defending deeply, we gave a ball away, but you'll probably come on to that. That was a disappointing thing.
Yeah, well, we'll come on to that, into the action. I mean, Ian, just talking about their lineup there, am I right in thinking that their keeper, Zach Steffen, he's an American. And wasn't he somebody when we were in the height of our spend spree 5 years ago even, that he was a player?
The answer to your question is yes, we were linked with him.
So he's, and he was called into early action. Let's talk about the early action, because for us, the early action when Vyman put a shot. I mean, was that a good save, or should Vyman have pushed it wide of the keeper, because it was straight at him, according to the Sky reports? He did well to get his shot away, didn't he?
Last season, Vyman scores that. And yes, he should have scored. I mean, it hit Stefan's leg, I think, or his hand. But from the position he was in, Andy Vyman of last season puts that in the roof of the net, or certainly beats the keeper with it. But he's another one that's running around a lot, but out of form, doing what Chris Honor calls his out-of-control speedboat thing. But I was glad to see, at least yesterday, Pearson put him at 10 and put Cornick at 7 in that formation. I think that made a difference to both players in terms of how effective they were.
Yeah. And they had a chance early on as well, Ian, didn't they? Akpom, it looked easier to score when that ball came in from the left. Let's say it was a game, it was played at pace for all of the 90 minutes, really, wasn't it? But that chance, he should have buried that, shouldn't he? Is he their top scorer, Akpom? I think he must be.
Oh, yeah, I think he's got 26, 27 goals this season. But the thing is, there was a lot of trouble with the wind down there yesterday. Now, whether the wind caught it at the last minute or something like that, you would think that 90 times out of 100, he headed that straight in the back of the net. But he headed it well wide. Yeah, that was a let-off, no doubt about it. But in fairness, I thought we had the better chances in the first half. And as I said earlier on, Borough didn't have an effort on target. And when you think it, the players they brought in on loan are costing them a lot of money in wages. But they are good players. And those players have made I mean, if you look at the turnaround under Michael Carrick, people talk about, oh, well, should you change your manager or shouldn't you? And it's easy to point out clubs like Blackpool and Wigan that have changed their manager 3 times and it's still all gone pear-shaped. It's not whether you change your manager or whether you don't. It's who you change your manager for.
Yeah.
If you include interims, there's now been 29 changes in the Championship this year. And some clubs, like I say, Blackpool are another one, I think. Blackpool have done 3. I think Wigan have done 3. QPR are on their 3rd. So it's a ridiculous situation. And the Premier League is almost as bad when you consider there's less clubs in it. So now got another manager in, Dean Smith at Leicester, along with John Terry and Craig Shakespeare.
So up to the end of the season, that is as well. Is it just to the end of the season?
Yeah, it is. But back to us, I mean, I thought we were the better team in the first half. And when you look at where Borough are in the league now, that is an achievement. And Pearson was quite right when he said after the game, when you look at the games that we should have won, and could we have picked up 9 more points this season? Absolutely, we could have picked up 9 more points this season. And that's
it's very easy, because if you look at the period like after the break, when we start that, we had that steamroller start, where we were running away with it, and then you had sadly the Queen's passing, and we sort of lost momentum there. But if you pick in, say, 4 more points in that run, just 4, and 3 more points from the run we had after the Man City game where it all went, that's 7 more points. We'd be sat there and we'd be going into the last 4 games of the season with a very good chance of the playoffs. Mark, let me come to you. Ian made the point about changing managers and, it does work. And this year we had Carrick. Last year we had Steve Cooper pretty much doing the same at Nottingham Forest, and their fans, they could well come down, but at least they've had one season of, if I may use the term, joy in the Premier League. I mean, it fails to work more often than does work. Mark, would you agree on balance?
Yeah, I mean, and Borough were taking what face value looked like a huge risk with somebody who have got no managerial experience, and assisting him is Jonathan Woodgate, who had put a poor time at Middlesbrough about 3 seasons ago, and he was faced with the same thing. Although he went down to Bournemouth, and he ended up being interim manager when their manager was sacked. So when Scott Parker got the push, so yeah, it's funny how things work out. I mean, they backed him in January, but Chris Wilder, you think that he would have been a safe pair of hands when he took over there. Would have started the season well, but they started the season terribly, and they were in the bottom 3 and 4 for the first few games. So he's done a miraculous job there, and but for their slow start, they would probably be in the top 2. Of course, you've got a season with, but Burnley have been absolutely unbelievable. Vincent Kompany's early in his managerial career, recently on Sky, he said that when he got the job, the chairman said, "I've got a 3-year plan for you to get in the Premier League." So they've done it the first season. Sheffield United still got parachute payments, but I mean, they're still playing with Billy Sharp's feature in a lot of games.
In his
mid to late 30s. So they've done well. And, Middlesbrough are playing probably for third or fourth, and Luton are punching well above their weight. But, well-run club, run a little bit more sustainably, lower wages. But you're probably
right up there.
You've got to get a team up in 2 seasons, really. I think if they don't do it this season, they'll probably have problems. But they still managed to, like I said, to amaze people, and they will get in the playoffs again. For a team, playing there with tiny crowds.
Well, half the crowds,
low wages.
Half the crowds that we get,
and they're going to finish third or fourth. And they changed their manager as well, didn't they?
Yes, they did, and
got a manager who'd failed Rob Edwards at Watford. Although the definition of failure at Watford is
if you lose
a game on the training ground, I think you get the sack the next day.
You're in trouble. Well done.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ian, come to you. Let's talk about both of the goals, because they're scored within, there was a half-time in between, but all 4 goals came within a 19-minute spell either side of half-time. But your view of our 2 goals and Cornick in particular, because he made one and scored one. Just take us through it as you saw them.
Well, I think, the first goal was a bit of a mess, to be perfectly honest. Cornick went for it in the air, didn't really edit well. It hit Wells. He got the ball. He got a toe in, stumbled through Vyman. Vyman, I don't know if that was a deliberate touch or not, back to put it in Cornick's path. Cornick, nice pass out to Sam Bell, who tucked in. Lovely right foot finish from probably one of the 2 best finishers. I'd say we've probably got 3 good finishers at that club now, and I think they're all better finishers than Antoine Semenyo. So that might start a debate. And that's Naki Wells, Tommy Conway, and Belly. And Belly is a natural goal scorer, a natural finisher. And he stuck that away, as they say, only in football, with aplomb.
Yeah. And was that his first goal at Ashton Gate, wasn't it? Yes,
no,
is that right?
He scored in the League Cup. In the FA Cup. Mm. But against, I think he got, did he get two against West Brom? And that was his first league goal at Ashton Gate. Apparently, when his dad played his last game for Bristol City, Sam Bell was two. And we remember Mickey. And it's strange, his dad had hell of a left foot and Sam's predominantly right-footed.
Yeah. And the second goal, Ian, talk us through that, because Sam was involved in that as well.
Ball was played out to him. And once again, tucking in on his right foot, he put a very accurate shot towards the bottom corner. Stefan got a hand to it, but Naki Wells had pushed up onto the ball and unselfishly squared the ball across to Cornick, who was onside, who just couldn't miss from that range. I mean, I don't think you'd have missed from that range, Dave. So we're 2-0 up and we're all getting excited, aren't we?
Yeah. Mark, the two goals from your perspective, I mean, Cornick's had his critics, you know, and unjustifiably. I mean, I was saying to Ian beforehand, do you remember we had a player we signed from Scunny, who was maybe one of their better players about
Martin
12
Walford.
Years ago? Martin Walford, and he was. Yeah. And then the start.
Do you remember the song?
I do, the start of the 2012. I was singing this to Ian before you came on, the start of the 2012 season. I think we beat Cardiff and Crystal Palace, two home games. Back to back, and he scored a brace in each of them. And the chant was, "There's only one Martin Walford, one Martin Walford." He used to be shite, and now he's all right. Walking in a Walford Wonderland,
is
that? And you know, and again, Ian and I were talking beforehand. Cornick had the danger, and okay, one swallow doesn't make a summer. Cornick had the danger of being those sort of characters that you remember Steve Jones, who played for us. You know, these strikers that Steve Jones with the tan, and
then another one. Where did you get that tan?
Where did you get that tan? And then another one, you know, with a somewhat flamboyant hairstyle. Do you remember Scott McGarvey back in the late 80s, who Joe Jordan, he was a surprise, Ian said to me earlier, a surprising signing for Joe Jordan. Yeah, but anyway, back to the goals in a minute. Interesting, in Walford, 55 appearances for City, 4 goals. Not a great player. One thing Ian didn't know, Mark, and I don't think you'll know this, Scott McGarvey, only 33 games for City in 88-89. And unless Wikipedia is wrong, how many goals do you think he got during that period? 33
10?
Games.
10?
13. I thought that was bloody good. Anyway, back to Cornick. That was his best game, undeniably, in a City shirt on every level, wasn't it? Don't you think?
Yeah, he was a nuisance. And that free behind Wells really pressed on. I mean, he pressed in to get that chance for Vyman, and I think Vyman was unlucky. I think the keeper, in Vyman's defence, Stefan came right off his line. So he was about 5 yards off his line when he saved it. So he narrowed the angle right down. But yeah, the goal, the first goal, he wins a couple of headers. Harry Cornick, and then he looks like he's completely off balance because his body weight's all forward, but he's still got control of the ball, pushing it through. I think Vyman will probably tell you it's a deliberate black flick. There's Cornick on the end of it, and he just lays it across for Sam Bell on a plate, but the finish is fantastic. He hits it so truly. It just zips under Stefan, 1-0. The second one, Naki Wells in the middle of the pitch. I think Andy Vyman plays a bit of a reacher, really, for Cornick. He puts pressure on the defender, who loses it, passes it out to Sam Bell. He's got defenders in front of him, but he forces Stefan to save to his right, pushes the ball out. And because Wells passes the ball backwards, Cornick's not offside when he lashes the ball in from two centimetres.
Yeah, it was right on the line, wasn't it? So here we go. We're coasting 2-0. Everybody's happy. I'm certainly happy and enjoying it. As I say, it was a great game of football to watch. But Ian, I think you did some statistics, or maybe it was Tom who's in the office.
I'm really sorry, but I'm gonna have to go. But I wish you all a good rest of the podcast.
Okay, good to have you on, Mark.
Thank you,
Tom. Curry, coming to you, Ian. Apparently, Borough have scored 70% of their goals in the second half, and they came out very determined. They were swarming all over us. But take us through both of their goals, which came within a 6-minute spell, that they were could have been better defended, I think you said to me before we went live. Tell me about the goals as you saw them.
Yeah, but from a defensive aspect, both goals were a bit of a disaster. Bell didn't get back tight enough to stop the fullback Smith's right wing cross. And Ramsey, who wasn't tracked by Cornick or Vyman, headed powerfully home into the bottom right-hand corner. So that was a poor goal. The second one was even worse. Pring tried to flick the ball up in the air with his toe because he had a player in front of him and he couldn't see a way of getting it out. Now, I think he had Matty James to his right, who he could have passed the ball 3 yards to, and he could have cleared it into Rose Ed. That was the centre edge of the penalty area. The ball was run back at City by Ramsey. We didn't get in front of or get round. And he passed it to the unmarked Crooks, who was onside about 8 yards out. And he slid the ball past O'Leary. Now, if Cam Pring had have stepped up 2 feet, Crooks would have been offside.
Mm.
So they were two poor goals. I mean, fair play. I'm the first bloke in the ground. If someone zings one in the top corner from 35 yards, I'm the first one in the ground to say, well, there's not a lot you can do about that, and applaud it. Those were two poor goals. And at that point, I thought, here we go. But in fairness, Pearson made some changes and they gave us the legs to almost go back in and win it. And we should have won it. With the Zach Viner opportunity at the end. I mean, after he got that good goal at Stoke, it was a case of after the Lord Mayor's show, although the cross was slightly deflected, and that might be an excuse. But it was a little bit like the one, you know, the one that Konate tried to put in against Arsenal for Liverpool, where right. He didn't know to head it, chest it, kick it, and he finished up just touching it onto the top of the crossbar from James.
I've not seen it back. So, and it went off his thigh, didn't it, or something? He just couldn't.
Yeah, I'm back. Sorry, I've got a call from my boss, so I answered that. I think he was slightly distracted by Cam Pring. He was in front of the defender, and it just hits his thigh. If he's able to lean forward, the ball goes under the bar. But it hits him, and I think he may be slightly distracted by Cam Pring's attempt to get on the end of it beside him with a Borough defender, and it was just one of those things, you know. If he gets it, he's a hero. The ball hits the man rather than it's a great yeah. free kick. Cause it beats everybody with the pace yeah. of it. I love to see more of those. I mean, somebody like Rob Atkinson would put those in all day, like he did against Preston. You know, he dives in to get the ball, but. Yeah, Viner, a little bit unlucky there.
Shame. Saying that, Ian, they had the chance. I mean, Max has had his critics in recent weeks. I thought his distribution was a bit better yesterday, and that was a smart save from him, save with his legs, which he saved from McGree later on, wasn't it? Yeah, and what about the goal that was ruled out for offside? I mean, it was a cracking strike from a very acute angle, but talk about that Max save and... was it offside? Have you seen it back? You were watching it on TV or seen it on TV. I haven't analysed it yet, but take us through those two incidents.
The goal was off. The goal they scored was offside by about a yard or even two. And O'Leary, good save with his feet from McGree. Fresh legs at the end of the game, got through on the left-hand side, which, I mean, Jay De Silva had another really strong game yesterday. But nobody... It's a little bit like the run for Ramsey for the second goal. Nobody got in front of him and tackled him. They were all trying to put a foot in from the side. McGree got through and his shot was well kept out by O'Leary. But if you look at, I think Man City finished up paying about 5 or 6 million quid for Zach Steffen. I don't know if I'd stop, if I'd swap him for Max.
No, and that's the thing, isn't it? You know, who you know... What makes a good goalkeeper? You know, who are we going to get if somebody goes out and brings a replacement in for Max? You know, if it was Stefan Bajic, who's out on loan at the moment, you know, he's done nothing. You know, you have to see a keeper for about half a season to judge whether he's any good, really, don't you, Ian?
Well, you have to see them home and away. And I'm reasonably happy with Max as a keeper. We'll have to take a look at Stefan Badgett, who's young for a goalkeeper. He's only about 21, coming up to 22. Yeah. Harvey Wells Richards, we haven't seen. We might, you know, Pearson might deign to give him a game towards the end of the season, but I don't know. That's not really his style. But yeah, I mean, one thing I did look at. I watched all those championship games yesterday. And one thing that struck me is all the sides are quite good going forward, but none of them could really defend. And I mean, including Middlesbrough in that, because I thought their defence weren't any better than ours.
No.
So you look at the championship and you look at what separates the top teams from the bottom teams. And if I told you the three teams that have conceded the least goals are Burnley, Luton and Sheffield United. Yeah. I think that tells you everything you need to know. And they haven't conceded, well, in fairness, Burnley have conceded 20 less than us. But, I mean, Luton have conceded 14 less. Sheffield United, 15 less.
Mm.
And then you go into the Millwall, who've conceded 9 less. And in fairness, then you go into goals scored. And once again, up at the top, Burnley, Middlesbrough, Sheffield United. But that defensive thing is the thing that separates the top teams from the mediocre ones.
Well, like Ian, just taking a point there, if you halve, if you just take Luton, you said, what, they've conceded 11 less than us. Is that right? Yeah?
Luton have conceded 41. Right. So nine less.
Nine less. So if you take half of that,
Sorry, that's the number of games I was looking at there, idiot. 36 goals conceded in 41 games. So the same number of games, and they've conceded 14 less goals.
14 less than us. So if you took half that number and transmitted that through to points, again, as you said earlier, you know, the difference between sort of playoffs and not, 7 on top of what we got now, we'd be in the playoffs.
Yes.
And that just shows what the fine margins are.
Luton have only scored 51 goals, but they, like Ian said, they conceded 14 goals less than us. We have made some progress.
That's 50, isn't it?
We scored 50 against 50. I mean, if you look at the promotion, the playoff season, I think we scored 53 and conceded 53 or 52. That was exceptionally low scoring, but we. In 2008, but we made some progress in defence because we conceded 77 goals over 46 games last season, and to date we've conceded 27 fewer. We'd hope that we'd not concede any more than say another 7, and we'd be 20, we'd be 20 in credit. So that's better, I think. Since Christmas, we've gone 8 games undefeated at Ashton Gate. Although we've only won 8 of 21 games, that's got to improve. We need to win, at least 12. We need to win 13, 14 games at home.
Yeah.
And we've won 5 away. But since Christmas, we have been a lot better. There is some progress being made. And we've got a look at the post-Alex Scott era. He's been missing for a few games now. And we got 5 points from the last 3 games. So that's a plus as well.
Definitely. No, definitely. Let's look at individual departments of the team, Ian. And, you know, it was interesting, Gary Hours afterwards talked about activity in the transfer market. We've got to go out and get players that are better than what we've got, in my view. You know, we don't want stocking fillers or something like that. If you look at that back four yesterday, Ian, Tanner, Viner, Pring and Jay De Silva. Now, Jay's been getting a lot of plaudits for his performances recently. Yeah. Can you see us keeping Jay De Silva, or do you think not?
I think not, because it's a financial thing. I mean, I'd rather have Jay than a lad, with all respect, from League Two, who might give us a little bit more going forward. But when I always come back to Kane Wilson, with League Two Player of the Season, not Forest Green, I mean the league. And he's had a terrible time.
Yeah.
So I'd rather hang on to Jay, but that'll be a financial one. And if he can get what he's earning at City, at Coventry, he's not going to be offered anything like that in terms of a new contract. So I don't think so. When you say we sign better players, I want to talk to Tinian when we see him about
this. Is it senior Reds next week?
Yeah. I can't see how we're going to, if we do three out and four in, which is what he said, if Scott goes, how our squad's going to be any stronger. In fact, it's virtually impossible for it to be stronger unless you're telling me that from League Two and League One, we're going to get a better midfielder than Scott and a better centre-half than Thomas. I mean, I'm talking about fully fit. It's never good people saying, It's never good people saying, oh, well, you know, he's injured. Well, all right, yeah. I mean, I'm better than him defending when he's got a broken leg, but I'm talking about if Kalas is fit and firing. So I can't see how you improve the squad. Now, I've said the fact we need at least six players in.
Let's just focus on defence. Sorry, and I was trying to sort of focus on
defence.
What was that, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, can I give my opinion?
Well, I was going to ask you the same question. Let's just deal with the defensive lineup. So if we take first weekend of August in this coming August, right, Tanner is growing into that right-back berth, and you could argue you've got underneath him Kane Wilson. Yeah. Viner is one of our most improved players. If Jay goes, Pring goes to left back, you could say Atkinson's there, but you talk about player numbers. We would need definitely another centre half to play in the middle. And if Jay goes, have we got any decent cover at left back? So I've come to you on that, Mark, first of all. You know, do you think Tanner and Viner, by their performances, they're going to be starting the first week of August later this year?
Yeah, Viner's our mine and quite a few people's player of the season, I hope. Been outstanding for us, right centre-back player who looked like he'd gone at the end of last season. So, he's a shoo-in for me. Tanner's improving week by week at right-back and does offer a threat going forward. Good passer of the ball. His two passes against Stoke were exceptional. One for Naki Wells, beat two defenders with that pass, and then the one that Naki Wells missed, the one for Vyman where he was slightly offside. He offers a threat. I think the Silva's probably playing for his next contract at another club. I think his card's been marked, so we'll move Cam Pring there, and we need another left back as cover. We're not going to have Atkinson until at least October, I think, because he's done his ACL. So the only cover we got is probably Duncan Idahan. And the other problem we got, of course, is we lost three centre backs. You know, if you count Tim Closer, and the fact that Nathan Baker had to retire as well because he was still being paid.
Well, Closer Baker and Kalas. You know,
oh, and Kalas. Yeah, I think Kalas is gone.
Yeah,
I think he. I'm not sure if he'd be made an offer. He'll be made an offer based on heavily reduced wages, at least half of what he's on at the moment.
But he'd get a better deal elsewhere.
Is he on in the 20s or about 18 grand? I think his fitness is against him. When he came in and against Man City, he was absolutely outstanding. But then he gets injured against Cardiff and his season's almost over. He's only going to play a handful of games.
Yeah.
It's really sad. But I think, like Ian said, the problem is we could bring in promising replacements on paper. If you buy from League One and League Two, people are going to say,
let me ask Ian.
What about the foreign market? Are we going to recruit from abroad?
Well, we got a network over there? Ian, if we, and you say we need to have two players for every position plus six to cover injuries, but just ignore the plus six, although it's folly to ignore it. If we say Pring has got the left back, if we're going to play a four, somebody's put on the text feed here, I wonder how much our points per game has increased since we switched to a back four. But if Pring is first choice on the left side, wide left side at the back, then that lad Curry from Wimbledon, he plays on that side as well, doesn't he? Yes. So he'd be somebody where you'd say a fit Pring is better than a League One understudy that Curry would be. Is that correct, Ian? Would you agree with me on that?
Well, he's a League Two.
A League Two. All right. But his position is on that left back, on that left side, yeah?
He's a left back. I mean, we need, in my opinion, at least two centre backs. We need two central midfield players.
Yeah.
One, the big problem that we've got with the current squad is that we're only going to get 30 games a season each maximum out of Naismith, James, Williams, or King. That's if King keeps playing and doesn't retire, because there's some talk he's going to retire. So you need somebody else to fill in for 20 games a season, or or if you go glass half full, you need a better player than them that is either going to play all the games, or they're going to play 20, 30 games a season each.
Yeah.
The other problem is they've tended all to get injured at the same time. Now that is just rotten bad luck. Now if you look at Naismith when he came on yesterday, he looked like a bloke that hadn't played football for 3 months.
Oh, his passes, his first two probing passes were awful. Absolutely awful.
All his passes were awful. Everything. He did make a couple of good defensive tackles, and he did head one ball away at corner, so that's handy. But he obviously, Pearson said before the game, if he plays, it'll be 30 minutes and that's your lot. He needs... I don't really know if he'll be up to speed by the end of the season, to be honest. So, like I say, we need, because of Atkinson's injury, and if Kalas goes, we need two centre-backs, a lefty and a righty. It'd be handy if we brought, as somebody said on here, it'd be handy if we brought another lefty in on loan. That is unless Pearson thinks Joe Lowe, Duncan Iden, or Callum Wood are ready to come in and can play first team football.
And then there's that Aurora, isn't there, coming up through the ranks as well?
Yeah, I don't think he's 17, 18 years old. So whether, I mean, when I saw him, he looked a real good player, and I think he put me in mind of Lloyd Kelly.
But broke through into the side at about that age, didn't he?
Yeah, so once again, you've got to leave that to the judgment of Pearson and the coaches, because they see him play week and they know their characters and all the rest of it. So, but no, I think those are the six players we need. And then that gives us, I think we, as well as those, there's the left back, the two central midfield players, the two centre halves, we need a nine. We still haven't got a proper nine. I know some people will say, well, Tommy can play there and Naki can play there. Yeah, they can. And I'd also like to see Nigel Pearson work out a formation where we can go back to having two strikers, because when we do that, we tend to score more goals, particularly when Naismith's in the side.
Ian, saying that, sorry to interrupt, saying that, you say, well, we got two strikers. If you look at what started yesterday, Wyman, Wells, Cornick and Bell, we effectively yesterday, we were playing a 4-2-4. We're playing a 4-2-4.
I think Cornick was working back. I mean, he didn't get it right all the time, but he was working back to stop Giles getting
forward. But look, next season, I mean, look, I think Vyman's a weak link there, and you could say, well, Sykes could come in on there. But look, next season, if you sort of said, well, Mometi didn't play, but if you had a strike next season, we've got a surfeit of strikers here. I totally understand what you're saying about a number nine, but if you've got Wyman, Vels, Cornick, Bell, and Conway and Mometi, right? That's a lot of strikers. I think with the money that we get for Scott, I think we need, it's, you know, because Matty James has been great this season. King and Naismith are, I think they become squabble. I think it's two bloody good midfielders. And if they're going to be that good, I wonder whether they'll challenge what the wage structure is, because that was mooted last week. I seem to recall reading in Bristol Live that somebody said, well, Pearson's got money to spend, but you might have a problem with wages.
Yeah, because they won't break the wage structure, I'll tell you that.
No. Now. So I wonder, and again, either of you, I don't know if you can think of any players, are there any players that are coming out of contract, right, that we can pick them up off of other clubs. Like somebody could well pick up, Kalas could be playing against us next season, yeah? And as I say, I'm not an advocate of keeping him, but we should surely be, you know, on, you know, say an attractive proposition. Why can't we pick up that player that has come out of contract, that we can give him a signing on fee and retain, you know, still retain the wage structure, can't we?
Well, you can, but the thing you've got to remember is that everybody else is after those players as well. Yeah.
All right.
So it does. If you're a professional footballer, yes, we've got a nice training ground. We've got a nice stadium, but other clubs have got a nice training ground and a nice stadium as well. So we just need to be, I mean, they will be targeting out of contract players. And they've already said guys from League One and League Two who've played 200 games. That was the change.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right.
So you're talking, if a lad's played 200 games, you know, you're talking he might be 24 to 25 rather than 20, 21.
Yeah.
And that might be the difference. But I still come back to my point about quality. So, for example, let's say Borough go up. You might be able to go up there and loan Barlaser, who they bought from Rotherham off him for a season.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. But then we know the manager. We know the manager doesn't like loans. Look, I say, guys, I'm a bit tight for time this morning. We can talk about this after the Watford game. I mean, Ian and Mark, just finish with you quickly. Any, you know, do you think if we were going to strengthen, if we're going to get, if you had a choice, two midfield players or two defenders, we probably need both, yeah? But what is the number one priority for you? Is it getting I'll call it a marquee signing in midfield, that not Barry Bannon, because he's going to get promoted with Sheffield Wednesday, but we almost want that player that is a playmaker, or maybe that's what we thought when we got Naismith, yeah? But what's the priority for you, Mark?
Well, you're going to have to replace Alex Scott. And you're going to need to cover. I mean, I think Andy King, you know, you might see him retire at the end of the season. I mean, his legs went at the end of yesterday's game. So you need another defensive midfield player. I don't think you can, unless he's able to get over his injury issues. I mean, we lacked, you know, a Joe Williams to really turn the ball over when we surrendered all that space. After we went 2-0 up. See, we need, can Williams continue missing all those games? I don't know.
Naismith is bad, Mark.
Oh yeah, he's missed, what is it? He's missed about 18 games as well, didn't he?
Well, he's played 20 games. Before yesterday, he's played 20 games this season.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, I think we need two or three midfielders. I think we need about five or six players, because we need a couple of central defenders. We're looking at a left back. We're looking at a left back anyway. I mean, the central defender thing is a priority, because we're going to miss Atkinson for at least a couple of months of the season. The good thing is we'll get Eamon Benaroos back. Hopefully, Eamon, he's young and he'll get over his. That awful ACL again, and his right knee, and he'll be back firing and ready to play in August. But if Derby don't go up, I think maybe Jason Knight would be available. But hopefully I'm sure we got a European scouting network to see if we can pick up bargains over there. I mean, you can pick up players. I mean, look at the likes of Pirro at Swansea, and he cost them about a million or two. Gustavo Hamer, I mentioned him before. Coventry picked him up from Eredivisie 1 or 2.
There's a lad that Millwall have picked up as well, who I asked, couldn't remember his name.
Is that Vogelshammer?
Maybe, yeah. A German player.
Yeah, yeah. So you can't, you can do. I mean, sure, we got a scouting network. So we can't just look at League One or Two players. And if you get those players, you're not going to say, are they better than the ones you got? They're going to say they're showing promise and they're punching upwards. But we know.
Well, do we then end up having quantity? Yeah. not quality. All right,
possibly it's the fitness has been an issue with George Tanner and Kane Wilson, and unless Kane Wilson gets some minutes before the end of the season, I mean, is he more seen as a wing back who suffered in the change of formation because Pearson doesn't see him as a natural right back? Could he play further forward in that three?
Well, that's it. We've forgotten Sykes. We've forgotten Sykes.
Well, yeah, of course. Well, Sykes's indiscipline is spoiled this season. I mean, he got sent off for kicking out.
But if you look at pure numbers, and I agree with Ian, I think it's wishful thinking on Brian Tinian's part that we can get away with just signing four players in the summer. But if you look at the striking, the offensive part of our game, I mean, you've got Sykes, Wyman, Wells, why am I pronouncing with a V? Sykes, Wyman, Wells, Cornick, Bell, Mometi, Conway, and Benarous. All of that little group, some of them are out and out strikers, and some of them can drop back and make up a three, right? We got numbers there.
You're throwing wide players in there as well. I mean, Sykes is a wide player. Benarous can come in and play anywhere along that three behind the striker, but he likes to play on the right hand side of it where Sykes plays. But he'll effectively, if he can get fit, he'll take Alex Scott's place. And here you are, I'll say something else controversial now. If he plays as many games as Scott does or has in a season, he will get more goals and more assists than Alex Scott.
Who's this?
Eamon Benarous.
Oh, God, yeah, because we haven't seen... Yeah, no, you're absolutely right.
You've got to differentiate the wide players from strikers. I mean, okay. Mometi, Stokes are wide players. And then I think Cornick was better in that seven role than he was as a nine or a ten. But he still needs to put on a stone of muscle and a yard of pace for me. But he did have a good game yesterday. So let's say when he is really up to speed.
All right.
It's going to be really useful.
All right. Well, look, we can continue this conversation.
I've got one more thing to say.
Go on, very quickly.
Yesterday, we had some members of our Scandinavian, it was a Swedish branch of the supporters club. We took two of them, actually. Leo Dolph from Norway. Ian's met him before. Big mane of hair, really jovial guy. And Bo from Sweden and Neil Palmer from the former Players Association. Let me introduce him to the likes of Tom Ritchie, Jerry Sweeney, Speedy Drysdale. We're there yesterday. David Rogers and Trevor Tainton. So you know they put a big smile on their faces. So a good end to the weekend. Very happy.
Fantastic, excellent. Well, look, that's good, guys. As I say, apologies for cutting it a bit short. Thanks to everybody who's been listening this morning. It's an interesting time coming up. I mean, two tough away games to come now, followed by Rotherham, Burnley, and then final day of the season away.
That could be a big drama, couldn't it? That could be interesting.
And I see Chris Martin scored for QPR, but you know, and Ian was saying earlier about does he give Harvey Wiles Richards a game between now and the end of the season? I think they're all quite big games in their own way. The only one he might give him a run out is against Rotherham, but City will be looking for that 60-point mark to possibly get in the top half of the table, which, because we've had a good Easter, makes it viable situation to be in. Guys, look, we'll be back on Saturday. We'll record the Watford review at 6 o'clock Saturday evening for those who want to listen live. But we've all got to get back to work, or some of us have. So thanks for listening and have a good day, everybody. All the best. Cheers.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
God bless everyone.
Bye. Bye. Stay safe. Bye.
Today, gonna put my cares in a whistle, blow them all away. What if I've been unlucky? Really, I ain't got a thing. There's a time I always feel happy as a king. When the red robin comes bobbing along, along, there'll be no more sobbing when he stops throbbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead, get up. Get up, get out of bed, cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When Red Robin's out bobbing along. Red Robin comes bobbing along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts robbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the Red Robin starts bobbing along.